In 1979, the first publicly funded recovery school in the country opened in Montgomery County, Maryland. That school was intended to help students recovering from drug addiction, and at its height, it had around 50 attendees. But by 2013, enrollment dwindled to just 3 students, and the school closed. Now, many are pushing the county to reopen a recovery school, but is the program the best use of county resources? Joining us to discuss the future of recovery schools in our region is Rebecca Smondrowski. She is a member of the Montgomery County Board of Education. Rebecca Smondrowski joins us by phone. Thank you for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Koja.
You're the one spearheading the committee on the Montgomery County Board of Education that's exploring reopening a recovery school. Before we go any farther, can you explain what a recovery school is and how it works?
So a recovery school would be an opportunity for students suffering from substance abuse issues who have come out of a rehabilitation program to be supported without having to go back to their comprehensive high school. You know, the benefits of it is it would have a sober environment. It would be socially and emotionally very heavily supported by MCPS while they're also getting the educational curriculum that they need to graduate.
How pressing, in your view, is the local need for a recovery school?
I think it's very pressing. I think it's something that, you know, we're continuing to see become a bigger and bigger problem, not just in Montgomery County, but in the state of Maryland, nationally. And I think that, you know, we have a responsibility to do everything that we can to help give every child the opportunity to be successful. And, you know, for a lot of children, that means something different than returning to an environment where it would be so easy for them to go back to the bad habits and the bad behaviors that they experienced before going into a rehabilitation.
You also say this issue is personal for you. How so?
It is. Well, I had a sister who passed away very young, who suffered from substance abuse issues. So, you know, this is something that, you know, I know it's not just something that affects the students. It affects far, far more people than that. It affects families and friends and the community as a whole. So it's a bigger picture when we talk about the money that we're spending on trying to support the students.
If you have questions or comments for us, give us a call at 800-433-8850. Send email to koja@wamu.org. Do you support a publicly funded recovery school? Why or why not? You can also send us a tweet at Koja Show. What responsibility do school systems have to support students recovering from drug addiction? You can also go to our website, kojashow.org. Ask a question, make a comment there. The number again, 800-433-8850. Joining me in studio is John Edmonds. He is the Vice President of the Association for a Recovery and Education of Greater Washington. He's also a former student of Phoenix School in Montgomery County. John Edmonds, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
You started attending the recovery school that formerly existed in Montgomery County, known as Phoenix, in the late 1980s. You first started using drugs when you were 11 years old. Can you tell us about how you ended up going to Phoenix?
Through a number of arrests and the court system, was introduced to the recovery field and was given an ultimatum from a judge to go to Phoenix 2 school or to go to a juvenile detention facility.
Were you at that point committed to recovery when you entered the school, or were you merely doing it because the judge ordered you to?
That's a great question, and that's, I really think, the key to recovery high schools, is that the peer pressure in recovery schools is to get better and to stay better, where, which is what I found there. To answer your question, when I arrived there, I had zero desire to change my life. But being encompassed within that community, the fog lifts and you get a new perspective.
How did the school ultimately change the path that your life was on?
Oh, it changed it 180 degrees. Without the Phoenix school, I would have been just another one of these guys in and out of prison their entire life, I think. It gave me the opportunity to have some sustained long-term sobriety. If I had to return to my high school, there would have been zero chance of staying sober. I think that's the biggest problem, is with the adolescents in treatment, inpatient treatment, returning to their same friends, same situations, with basically the same skills. You know, 28 days doesn't do much, but, you know, dry you out a little bit.
Also joining me in studio is Arthur T. Dean. Arthur Dean is the chairman and CEO of Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America. Arthur Dean, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
After crunching the numbers, Arthur Dean, Montgomery County predicts that a recovery school would cost more than $2 million a year, about $40,000 per student. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, we at CATCA, Kojo, are very concerned about keeping young people away from substances. So our primary focus is to prevent it from ever starting. So we're on the prevention side. And our dollars that support primary prevention, which is working with adolescents where addiction normally starts, have been reducing significantly. If you look at the federal government over the last 6 or 7 years, it's over 40% of the money spent in prevention has been reduced. So I guess my position would be that primary prevention needs more dollars, and if the county can find sufficient dollars once after funding their primary prevention to be supportive of recovery high schools, we certainly have no objection to that.
So you're saying the first priority should be county taxpayer funds going into primary prevention before looking at using taxpayer funds on a recovery school?
That would be our perspective. And I say that only because we are trying to get to what we consider the population level reduction, meaning you want to get all of the kids in a particular city, community, county to understand the importance of staying away from substances, understanding the importance of not using at all, and if they are, to get them into counseling as early as possible before they get to a disease state. That's what we are all about.
800-433-8850. Did you attend a recovery school? Do you know someone who did? Tell us your story or what you know about theirs. 800-433-8850. John, Montgomery County's recovery school closed in 2013 after membership dwindled to 3 students. Why, in your understanding, did that happen?
When it finally closed, it was not primarily a recovery school. About 15 years ago, there was a fire at the recovery school location, and it got blended with some other alternative schools who did not share the same primary purpose that the original Phoenix program was designed for. You know, it could have been behavior issues, psychological issues, attendance issues, you know, so they really lost their focus.
Is that your understanding, Rebecca Smondrowski, of how or why the school closed?
It is, as you know, that, and there was also funding cuts and things like that, so that made it harder to keep it going. Can I comment to one thing about what Mr. Dean mentioned?
Sure.
I just want to say, you know, at MCPS, we completely support what he is saying, and we recognize that a recovery school is only one piece of the puzzle in addressing substance abuse. You know, MCPS, we take a very proactive approach in our health curriculum that speaks to drug and alcohol use and abuse. We infuse the information in the kindergarten through grade 12 curriculum. And you know, we do appreciate very much the fact that the best case scenario is where kids don't get started down that pathway. But, you know, we just are looking at ways of trying to support them if, in fact, that does end up happening.
We got an email, a tweet from Josh Starr, the former superintendent of Montgomery County Public Schools. He says, this is an ongoing issue for years. The question is whether the need and the data support it, and whether there's a gap in community resources for Montgomery County Public Schools to fill. How would you respond to that, Rebecca?
I would say that, you know, this is something that we're looking at. Yes, it is. It's an expensive project. We are looking at opportunities to perhaps do a regional facility. This is something that Governor Hogan has proclaimed as a state priority. This is something that the governor and the state legislature have all expressed their concerns with on this issue. So, you know, right here, right now, we're proposing a way to help do something about it. And I'm really hopeful that the state will work with us to help make it a reality in funding and in reaching out to other counties nearby to see if it's possible to do something collectively to help try and reduce the cost as well.
Well, we heard from a previous Montgomery County Public School superintendent. I guess we should hear from the current one in response to the board's motion to add recovery schools to its legislative agenda for the state government. Superintendent Jack Smith had this to say.
I think that it is a very good idea to include this in the legislative platform and push it forward, because I think that this is a place where scale will really help us meet the needs of students across the 24 school systems. And I would hope that the state, working together with the local school systems and local county governments and communities, would create a system of care so it didn't matter where you lived in Maryland, there would be opportunity for you.
The school superintendent, Rebecca, was responding to a motion that the school board had passed, indicating that this is something that it wanted to happen. But how would the program be different this time around?
Well, again, some of it will depend a little bit on how it ends up being structured, whether it ends up being an MCPS programmed solely, or whether or not we're able to do it as a regional facility.
Do you support the idea of a statewide network of regional recovery schools?
I do very much so. I think, as we kind of said, this is a growing epidemic, not just in Montgomery County but nationally, and certainly in the state of Maryland. The more students that we can help, the better. The more counties that are involved, the better cost sharing there could be, or opportunities there are. So I do think that is probably the way that we should go, if we can get other counties to be supportive of this and join in with us.
Does a statewide recovery school system exist anywhere in the United States as far as you know? Do you think one is feasible?
We have had some relationships with those that are involved with recovery schools. They are attempting to get a national network. I don't know exactly, to be honest with you, how well that is going. The challenge has been, from my understanding, although that is not my area of expertise, is the dollars. That is, being able to resource them. And for an example, we believe that the county, Montgomery County, does not have the number of community anti-drug coalitions that it deserves to have to prevent the problem in relationship to other counties in the U.S. And what we found is that when you build a coalition in a county or in a city and you train them properly, the substance abuse rates go down substantially, anywhere from 20% to 30%. And the challenge, as Rebecca has said, is that dollars are limited. And when communities spend their dollars trying to prevent the problem, to eradicate the problem, they sometimes don't have the necessary dollars to help those young people who are, in fact, suffering from the disease of addiction, and can help them in a privately set environment like a recovery school. That becomes the challenge.
Expanding on that even a little more, Rebecca, could a recovery school shared by D.C., Maryland, and Virginia be a possibility?
Absolutely. That's something that, again, our superintendent, as well as our head of student support, are reaching out to other boards and other counties to talk about.
Okay, a lot of people want to talk about this who have joined us by phone or sent tweets or emails to us. I'll start with Justine in Montgomery County. Justine, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I've taught in MCPS for 5 years, and I think a lot of the unspoken part of our job is we focus on our students' mental health and mm-hmm. not only ensuring that they're safe, but making them feel safe. And I feel that...
You're breaking up, Justine. Can you hear me? You're going to have to get to a more stable location. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to finish that thought, so I'm going to put you
yes,
on hold
too.
and try to make sure that we get back to you. In the meantime, here's Luke in Silver Spring, Maryland. Luke, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Kojo. Good to talk to you again, actually. I just wanted to talk about some personal experience. When I was younger, I struggled with, you know, problems with marijuana. In my older years, it was alcohol. And it really is, you go into these programs not wanting to stop at all, and you really need a completely all-inclusive program to completely overhaul your thinking of, you know, getting on a track to change your life and really be productive. I think that everything they've been talking about with these programs sounds great, especially when you're young. It's really hard to change your mind. Kids can be very stubborn, as I was. I'll take my call off here. Thanks so much.
Well, before you go, how large was the class that you were in?
It was like 15, 20 kids. All of it was private, though. Sorry, this is not one of the programs that you guys are talking about.
Okay, that's fine, because, John, some have expressed concern that what we were discussing earlier, a regional recovery school, might swell to too large a size, and that Montgomery County has more than enough students to fill its own program. At most, Phoenix School had around 50 students. Based on your experience as a student, John, what was the value of that small school size?
That's a great comment because, from my understanding, the sense of community really forms between 20 and 30 people, and after around 50 to 70 people, that starts to dissipate. You're more apt to get in little groups, little cliques, and that's not really conducive to a recovery high school. Most of the recovery high schools in the nation, which there are 40 of them, are in the neighborhoods of 20 to 40 maximum. You know, there's a few at about 100, but they're the rare, not.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be continuing this conversation on a proposal for a recovery school in Montgomery County, Maryland, and whether that can be expanded across the state or region-wide. But we're still taking your calls at 800-433-8850. How has drug addiction affected you or your family? Would a recovery school make a positive impact? Should schools spend public dollars on drug abuse prevention, addiction recovery, or some combination of the two? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo at wamu.org or tweet at Kojo Show. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/book club.
Welcome back. We're talking about the proposal for a public school in Maryland in Montgomery County that would help young people recovering from addiction. We're talking with Rebecca Smondrowski. She is a member of the Montgomery County Board of Education. Arthur T. Dean is chairman and CEO of Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America, CATCA. And John Edmonds is the vice president of the Association for a Recovery and Education of Greater Washington. He's also a former student of the Phoenix School, the recovery school that existed in Montgomery County. We have Justine back on the phone. Justine, hopefully you're in a more stable place now. Go ahead, please.
I hope so. Sorry.
Nope.
Not really sure.
Nope. Still not working, Justine. We're going to have to try again. But here is an email we got from Elliot. Elliot writes, "Why should we force the taxpayers to pay for the failures of people who decide to get addicted to drugs and or alcohol? And how can we expect people to take responsibility for themselves when they'll just be bailed out by the taxpayer?" Well, John Edmonds is someone who was quote-unquote bailed out by the taxpayer. How did you ultimately take responsibility for yourself?
Well, in response to the email, obviously the ideal situation is that nobody gets in these spots.
Right.
But ideally, that's, you know, what we want. But realistically, that's not what happens. And so the question is, do you want to reduce the amount of harm, reduce the cost? Because in the long run, once a alcoholic or drug addict gets into the court system and the prison system, the cost is astronomical, comparatively speaking. And I think the Montgomery County estimate of the cost is really, really high. That's not the average cost per student that we're seeing nationwide. It sounds more like they were just kicking the can down the road to somebody else.
Rebecca, and then Arthur. Phoenix was the first publicly funded charter school in the country. And since then, dozens more have opened. We have several people who have been writing emails to us telling us about schools in New York and other places that have opened since then. But is there substantial evidence that they are effective at preventing relapses? First, you, Rebecca Smondrowski.
I don't have the statistics, but from my understanding, yes, there is concrete evidence that kids who are supported in this way after having been through rehabilitation do far better in terms of recidivism than students who end up going back to their comprehensive high school. Traditionally, from what I understand, kids who go back to a comprehensive high school are offered the opportunity to participate in substance use within the first day of returning back to their routine lifestyle. So I do think it makes a difference. I do think it matters. And I have to say, I agree with what John said in terms of, you know, we're not finished looking at all of the costs, but if you look at the issue big picture, as I mentioned earlier, you know, this is something that doesn't just affect the student. So when you're looking at cost per student, it's bigger than that. This is something that affects family and friends and the community as a whole. And once kids are in the prison pipeline, it is far more expensive for taxpayers to support them than it is for them to help make them be successful in their efforts to get healthy and do well and change their lives.
Arthur Dean, have you and Katka looked at any studies about this?
We have done lots of studies on the prevention side. I'll just give you a quick example. When a county like Montgomery County invests money in trying to prevent the problem before it starts, they save anywhere from $2 to $20 on every dollar they invest. When there is a group that is formed and trained, we have hard data published annually independently of CATCA that says that the substance abuse rates for kids are reduced in that community. I'm looking at high schoolers now. Alcohol is about 20%, tobacco around 25%, even marijuana is about 10%, and prescription drugs are down. So we have hard data that you can prevent the problem. We don't have hard data on what happens for the small number of kids like John that go through a recovery school. So I guess our position is we're not against recovery schools, but you got to, with limited dollars, you got to decide where you're going to place your dollars.
Well, there's certainly a lot of anecdotal evidence that we're getting. We got Ed Fishman from Bethesda sending us an email saying, almost 40 years ago, my mother helped open a school in White Plains, New York, for kids who were struggling with drugs and alcohol and other issues in the home that were driving them to failure. It was a very welcoming place for these kids who became very attached to the place and the teachers. It was so successful that the county created a countywide program, and the school my mother worked at became a teen center and vocational training program. The need has not gotten any less acute over time, but as with the situation here, the loss of focus and funding cuts is a problem. So we move on. John Edmonds, you are currently working to open a recovery charter school here in Washington, D.C. Why and how far along are you in that process?
We started 2.5 years ago. We just recently, in the last year, received our 501c3 from the federal government. We are in the process of raising funds and then teaming up with Focus, which is Friends of Charter Schools in the U.S., to submit our application sometime early next year.
So you're moving along in the process. Here now is Connie in Bethesda, Maryland. Connie, your turn. Hi, Connie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Connie, you're there, but you sound like you're very far away and not very close to the phone. And go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm talking now?
Yes.
Okay, well, I am calling because I see the importance of letting the public be fully aware of how bad marijuana, how addictive it is. And I'd like to see public funding go into not helping the individual user out of the the addiction. Instead, it should be used more in the widespread of the public education of how bad it is.
And of course, marijuana is legal in the District of Columbia, and medical marijuana is legal in Maryland. But Arthur Dean, again, any studies on the addictive qualities of marijuana? People tend to believe that it is not as addictive as alcohol or cocaine or heroin.
There are studies. The National Institute on Drug Abuse, I serve on their advisory board, has done scientific studies, and it says that if adolescents get involved in marijuana use, 1 in 6 will become addicted without having to progress to a further substance. If you're an adult and you get involved in marijuana, you're using it 3-4 times a week, 10% of the adults will become addicted. So it is true that marijuana in and of itself is an addictive substance. But beyond that, Kojo, most of the people who are abusing opioids and heroin started, unfortunately, with marijuana.
What role did alcohol play in any of those addictions?
Alcohol has a major role to play as well. If you are abusing alcohol as an underage person, your chances are like 4 times greater to get involved in other drugs, and it's about 5 times greater if you're abusing marijuana.
Rebecca Smandrowski, what support currently exists in Montgomery County for students who are struggling with drug abuse?
Well, so as far as in our schools specifically, you know, we have counselors there, but, you know, obviously that's not enough. You know, we work with our community partners and implemented programs like Students Against Destructive Decisions, Red Ribbon Week, things like that. We do a lot of referrals for kids to be looked at, and so we approximately 1,000 students every year are referred to the Department of Health and Human Services Screening and Assessment Services due to incidents involving drugs or alcohol. You know, about a third of those referred had a history of substance abuse. So really for us, it's been about working with our community partners. And, you know, that is something that I was going to mention before in reference to one of the other comments that one of your guests made. You know, this is definitely, it's a multi-agency issue and something that we, you know, really need to work in close partnership with our other agencies. And in Montgomery County, we're really lucky to have those partnerships. And we need to be at the forefront of these initiatives that give students what they need to be successful. So.
Well, as they say, the first time is happenstance. The second time might be coincidence. So we're going to try for a third time with Justine to make sure that nothing's going on here. Justine, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, third time's the charm, I hope. So sorry for the drops. Just wanted to say that I really loved this discussion, and I wanted to respond to the email. Definitely, I can understand the physical aspect of all of this. And I appreciate the conversation about how having people in the prison system is much more costly long-term. But just in terms of emotionally making sure that we're supportive of our students, mental health really is a big deal. And having set the grounds of making sure students feel trust in their community at an early level will help them later on, I think, as well, and us as a nation, as a community. And having a recovery school would provide a safe community of relationships for people that might not have them elsewhere. And that's really all I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you very much. But you do raise the issue of activities. John, a main feature of Phoenix and the many recovery schools that have emulated it is a large number of outdoor activities. What sorts of outdoor activities did you do at Phoenix, and why do you think they were important and beneficial?
One of the reasons why I think they're so beneficial is that it gave us a place to interact with each other on the weekends. As you know, school is Monday through Friday, and it kept us busy and away from the other crowds that were not helpful to us. And we did everything from skiing to whitewater rafting to hiking, just rock climbing, all the different outdoor activities you can think of.
We got an email from Leif, who is a professor of neuroscience at the University of Colorado Boulder. He says, I was a student at Phoenix 2 in 1988-1990 at a critical time in life. I had flunked out of traditional high school, had developed a serious alcohol and drug addiction, and had just finished a 45-day stint in residential treatment. Phoenix 2, the staff and fellow recovering students, redirected me at a critical time in life. I was destined for academic failure and lots of other trouble. Instead, I went to college, earned a degree, then went to graduate school and earned a PhD. Now I'm a professor, father, and hopefully contributing member of society. That would not have happened without Phoenix. But, Rebecca, the Phoenix School and recovery schools in general exist to help students who are recovering from addiction, hence the name. That means that the students who attend are no longer using and likely went to rehab or received some other support. In the case of John's case, it was apparently a judge. Could that create an equity issue? In other words, might the school only be available to students who have somehow stumbled onto the resources to get sober, but not to those who do not?
Yes. Well, you know, that's a great question. And that is a conversation that we are continuing to have. In a perfect world, in an ideal situation, I wish it could be for every child who wants support in overcoming an addiction, even if they haven't been through rehab. I love the fact that a judge took the opportunity to offer John as a student a choice in how he wanted to proceed with his life, and that the Phoenix program was available to be part of that solution for him. So I would like to see it be more of that. And that is a concern of mine, and I'm sure of the full board's. And so those are conversations that are absolutely ongoing.
John, in your thinking about opening a recovery school, how would students get to your recovery school if they have not yet undertaken recovery?
There's a number of outreach methods that were used then and that we will use going forward. In Phoenix 2 School, one of their activities with kids that were farther along into recovery that were doing well, they would visit other high schools, and the principals would gather up a few troubled kids, and they would have a presentation as to how their life had changed and what the recovery school had done for them. So we were doing that in every county school at the time. So there's that outreach and working with guidance counselors, working with the judicial system, and also working with the recovery community. There's a few intensive outpatient therapy places here in the District of Columbia and Montgomery County for adolescent drug addiction.
Well, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan called it an emergency. The number of opioid deaths jumped from about 1,100 in 2015 to nearly 1,900 last year. Most of those that are affected with overdoses are between people 25 and 34 years old. Any idea, Arthur, the extent to which it's affecting teenagers and school kids?
There are teenagers that are unfortunately losing their lives, but you are right. The numbers, the age bracket you cited is the most prominent bracket. But I was out recently in Ohio, and there was an overdose of a person as young as 11 years of age. So the issue is we got to convince.
I've got about 10 seconds.
Okay. We got to convince by working across all of the sectors in the community that starting the use of substances is what gets you into trouble, and we need to put things in place that will stop that from happening.
John Edmonds, Rebecca Smondrowski, Arthur Dean, thank you all for joining us. WAMU education coverage is supported in part by American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's it for the show today, but there's always more happening. We'd like your help in shaping a community conversation. We'll be hosting in Northern Virginia next week about guns. Where do you think the conversation about gun rights, gun violence, and the law needs to go in the Washington region? Send us an email with the subject line guns. The next edition of Kojo in Your Community will explore this issue next Tuesday, July 25th at George Mason University's campus in Arlington. It's free and open to the public, and we want you to come. You can find all of the information at our website, kojoshow.org/events. We'll be back here tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
The Kojo Nnamdi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelisa Schrobsdorf, Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Avery Kleiman, and Patrick Fort. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.